Whenever models come out, quite often you see these benchmarks listed with the numbers next to them. Vast majority of those are kind of static benchmarks. And what I mean by that is that someone who is expert in the area would design a set of questions, and they're quite often verifiable questions. So you have to have whatever the field of mathematics that they're talking about, the answer has to be an integer. That's the kind of constraint, the limitation they have to have. Otherwise, it's impossible. But if it's something like, let's say, you're making a landing page, how could you possibly come up with anything meaningful there that you can actually measure? And I come against this all the time, that in my personal work, quite often I would try to come up with some tests that it can run and validate, and it would then pass all the tests, and what comes out is complete nonsense. It's like, it looks completely awful, right? So, but as a human who can look at it, like, you can instantly tell, oh, there's like a lot wrong with it. I want to see is that people are actually testing these models themselves, and they develop their own opinions about how these models perform. So that's the kind of thing that I want to make sure that my agent started taking over my browser. Let me come
forward. You've got too much AI behind the scenes, mate.
Yeah, this.
You guys, I back myself on knowing the who's who of who's in AI. The geniuses, the pathfinders, the people that are huge behind the scenes that you might have not heard of. And this is one of those perfect examples. Peter Gostev is hiding in plain sight. He is the AI capability lead at Arena. And tens of thousands of us have been really following his work in the LLM ranking space for years. He's at Arena, which doesn't just measure benchmarks, they also measure human preferences, and they do this at a huge scale that has a big influence on how AI models are actually adopted now. In this episode, we speak about the cautionary tale of DeepSeek, we talk about Mythos benchmarks, and the blunt take on whether there are geographies doing billion-dollar training runs outside of the US and China or not. If you ever wanted to know if the hype around a certain model is grounded in fact or not, this episode is going to give you a real understanding, a strong basis in knowing what to look for going forward. Thank you, Peter, for being on this episode. I loved this show.
You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Founders scale faster on Deel. Set up payroll for any country in minutes, hire anyone, anywhere, get visas handled fast, and get back to building. Visit deel.com/day1. That's deel.com/day1.
Hi, Peter. I'm so thrilled that after finally meeting you in person, I've got you on in the blink of AI. Thank you so much for joining us all the way from London, England. Can you start us off with your AI hack of the week?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. I would say my biggest hack is just always trying to turn your half thought about, maybe you've got an idea about an app or something you want to research, into the actual action. So what I mean by this is that what really helps is voice. So maybe it's like multiple hacks within the hack.
Hack inception.
But yeah, voice to, yeah, exactly, yeah. Voice to text, like, I use it so much. I don't know if it's obnoxious, but yeah, when I'm walking my dog or something, I just talk to my phone a lot. Because, you know, you're out and about and you want to just like, oh, you've got this idea, you want to do something and just send it off. So I really like doing that. I've got now Codex with the remote control, so as in you can use it from your phone. That really helps a lot. Or if you're just using whatever, ChatGPT, Claude, just like really turn, use voice, and just whenever you have like a little thought, just send it off to AI and then come back, deal with it later. But I think that really helps you go from just like vaguely sort of maybe thinking to something that you can actually do yourself later.
I'm not sure if this is too much information, but I have my best ideas in the shower, you know, like shower thoughts. I need like a waterproof, like a transcription to be like, because that's where I come up with my best like ideas and content and things like that. And walks are good too. Like until that happens, a walk is a great idea. Love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you work at Arena AI, you know, the leading community-based platform for evaluating and testing artificial intelligence models. I've been following you since before you worked there. It's just an incredible space for most of us that may not really understand the technical behind the models and really understand from a benchmark perspective where they're strong, where they're weaker, and things like that. What's like the mission of the business as you see it?
Yeah, for me, the most important part is that we see how do real people use AI and how they value it. So that's, for me, that's the most important part. So a lot of the time you see these benchmarks, which are, they are very useful, the static benchmarks, but they're very narrow. It's like GPQA, for example, was a very nice benchmark, did us a lot of good. But in reality, it's only like multiple choice questions. They're okay. Very good questions, but they're still multiple choice. They're only, I can't remember how many, they're like a couple of hundred of them, maybe 300. And they condense the whole of science into that. And there's definitely value in that because we can track on consistent basis. But what you can't do is to capture the whole of use cases, the whole of set of judgments that humans would have. And that's what we contribute. So if you're a user, you're a lawyer, or you, just like to play with websites or something, you want to try and create landing pages, then we can capture your judgment, your feedback as well. And I think that that's really important because it gives us that more rounded perspective of how AI performs. And for me personally, the reason why I joined Arena as well is that I was a big user of Arena. For me, it was really useful to calibrate myself, my understanding to how models actually perform versus the numbers that I'm seeing. So for me, that's why I was a big fan.
Yeah, I could tell your passion for it. You were doing this, you know, as just someone sharing what they're learning about the models as you were going. And frankly, myself and many others were following along because we felt that passion. We were learning a lot from it. I found this really interesting that the company was originally created by researchers from UC Berkeley. And, you know, I'm curious if you know when the AI labs, the Anthropics, the OpenAIs started to pay attention that, oh my gosh, we're getting benchmarked, and whether they, like, when and how they started to interact with the company.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know exactly, but it feels like from the very beginning, at least the community really cared. So it was one of those places where early on it was quite a nice way to just see where the models are. And I remember I was writing about it. I had nothing to do personally with Arena at the time. And I remember writing about it. And I think like that went mini viral, and like even Karpathy said, oh, it's like the best place where I can learn about how the models perform. So it was like, so I don't know if they were working with the labs back then, but it felt like at least the place where community really could go and see how the models are. And because so many new models come out all the time, and it's gotten, the pace is even higher than it used to be, it's really impossible to keep track of. So we do need these kind of places. The more the merrier in terms of how we can assess those models.
I love the more is merrier. And the community vibe is definitely there. The fact that Karpathy even commented on it, like these heroes in AI clearly are paying attention, but the community matters because at the end of the day, these are the people using the models as well, right? Mm. So you mentioned to me briefly the difference between static benchmarks and human judgment. Can you explain that to the audience so they understand the difference?
Yeah, so whenever models come out, quite often you see these kind of benchmarks listed with the numbers next to them and so on. Vast majority of those are kind of static benchmarks. And what I mean by that is that someone who is maybe expert in the area, or they just put money into it, they design a set of questions. And they're quite often verifiable questions. And they are quite often really good, very solid work. And one good example I have is Frontier Maths benchmark from Epoch AI, very good organization. They put a lot of effort in working with mathematicians to come up with these questions. And that way they can really track the frontier of the progress. The challenge that they had, and they'll talk about them about it themselves is that it's very hard to verify complex mathematics. So they had to come up with questions which have an answer which is just like one integer. So you have to have whatever the field of mathematics that they're talking about, the answer has to be an integer because they need to be able to easily validate. They can't have like 100 researchers like checking every single answer because otherwise like it would be impossible. So that's the kind of constraint, the limitation they have to have. Otherwise, it's impossible. And I think for maths, like it's reasonable to have something like that. I think they have to make some compromises, but at least it gives them like a good signal. But if it's something like, let's say, you're making a landing page or you're making, some kind of data visualization. Now, how could you possibly come up with anything meaningful there that you can actually measure? And I come against this all the time that in my personal work, quite often I would try to come up with some tests that they can run and validate, and it would then pass all the tests. And what comes out is complete nonsense. It's like, it looks completely awful. So it's perfectly reasonable to say that, oh, I'm just bad at creating tests. I mean, maybe, but the point is that it's hard, right? So, but as a human who can look at it, like you can instantly tell, oh, there's like a lot wrong with it.
That's what I like
about this is that, yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I'll speak for myself that in Australia here, everyone is obsessed with Claude, won't hear a bad word, doesn't matter which model, doesn't matter what we say. And I love Claude too. I have a subscription to Claude, but if I want to generate images, like here is my fireplace, I want to redesign it, the only model that does a good job for me on the Western models front is ChatGPT. And I think that is currently seen as a bit of a faux pas. You know, everyone has to say they love Claude the most. It's just better at that stuff for me, personally.
It's interesting you say that. I mean, to be fair to Claude, they actually don't have the image generation model. But for example, between like the Google one, Google also has an image generation model. And there was definitely this kind of, or like people very opinionated about like, oh, I really, really like nano-banana models. So like I think that's the and we also had that kind of feedback a lot. It's like, oh, why is the ranking like this? So I really love this model. And it's completely fair because also like that's what I want to see is that people are actually testing these models themselves and they develop their own opinions about how these models perform. So that's the kind of thing that I want to make sure that my agent started taking over my browser.
Let me come to it. You've got too much AI behind the scenes, mate.
yeah.
No, that is such a good point. And it reminds me of, you know, if you judge a bird how to swim or a fish how to fly, it's like obviously not going to perform well. You've got to judge it based on what it's trying to be good at. On that point, tell the listeners, Peter, what is the current state of play on the charts? Who's doing really well and for what reason? Give us the lowdown.
If we look at the Arena leaderboard, I think it's a pretty fair representation. It kind of matches my vibes more or less. I think we can debate some of the details. But it's interesting if we went back maybe, I don't know, 6 to 8 months, maybe a bit more. I remember we had Claude models lower down the rankings. And I remember the feedback we used to get. It's like, well, I love Sonia 3.5. Like, why is this not higher? And it would kind of rank, I can't remember exactly, but something like top 10, top 12, like something like that. And it was kind of interesting. We were wondering, like, is there anything kind of wrong there? But it seemed to all check out. It's just what community preferred in this kind of blind testing. And now the Anthropic models are really, really dominating across multiple leaderboards. And I think that matches really well in terms of the real world kind of adoption that we've seen. So I think the time that Anthropic models went up the rankings on our leaderboards is also the time when they started capturing a lot of market share and growing the market quite a lot. Beyond that, I think we've got that kind of overall text leaderboard. And I think sometimes people would wonder, oh, some models like really high there, what's going on? Like, I know MuseSpark, for example, did really well. And I think like it is not a bad model, but yes, some of the rankings, I think Like it's worth exploring what's going on there a bit more. So one good way of doing that is if we go into some of the other subcategories for those leaderboards. And that helps us to understand a bit more. So we've got like expert leaderboards, and where it really looks at the subset of the different models, the kind of prompts that we have. So in there, you'll see that the rankings change and so on. So then another category that I'm quite interested in is that kind of web, our code arena. Code arena, in our case here, measures mostly the kind of the front-end performance, so where people can generate a website, landing page, and so on, and then see how it performs. So it's not necessarily like measuring, I don't know, if you've got a million line code base and how it navigates that, so we're not measuring that. So it's probably undervaluing some of those skills, but it is valuing really well the kind of front-end skills and things like that. And there again, Claude models do really well, although it's interesting to see how the progression has been from like 4.6 to 4.7, 4.8. Like it's not like obviously massive jumps on the leaderboards. So I think that is kind of curious. And I think another trend that is interesting is models from Chinese labs such as the Qwen 3.7, JLM 5.1, also recently just came out M3 from Minimax. That seems to be a really good model. I just tested it yesterday. So that feels like there's a lot of competition to the frontier labs, that especially from China. So that is definitely interesting to see.
Founder scale faster on Deel. Set up payroll for any country in minutes, hire anyone anywhere, and get visas handled fast so you stay focused on scaling. Deel takes care of onboarding, HR, IT, EOR, benefits, and compliance so your team can grow without borders. It's why more than 40,000 fast-growing companies trust Deel to move fast. Visit deel.com/day1. That's deel.com/day1.
I can't wait to ask you a bit more about the geographical race, but I'm dying to know, how much do you think the charts influence behavior, if at all? Do you think people go to the charts to help their model choice, like what I will pay for a subscription for? And if you think that does happen, who are the people most likely to do that? Is it the engineers because they're quite quantitative driven? And tell me about, the people that use your charts the most and how it impacts their behavior.
I guess what is maybe slightly less helpful if you are looking at the overall category, and then you're saying, well, that means I've got this niche use case, so I'm going to use the top ranking model for like overall category. So for that, we do have subcategories where we can see, for example, by the different occupation, for example, or different kind of use case. So we've got like vision, for example, or search or document and so on. So it helps you kind of narrow down. So I think that kind of hopefully influences a bit more directly in terms of what kind of use cases you care about. So if you're a lawyer, you can go to the legal leaderboard and see which models perform better. So that's one dimension. Another one, I think it does, I would say, influence most directly, at least the way I can see it, is that when a new model launches, there's a whole of momentum that the launch has in terms of how do people perceive it. And if the benchmark results are bad, then I think people just kind of, oh, I'm not even going to try it. So because there's so much going on, and if it's ranked eighth, like who cares, right? I've got my already, the one I've been using is higher, so we can move on. But if it does rank highly, then maybe you give it a go. So I think there's I don't think it's a guarantee. I don't think benchmarks themselves just sell the model, make everyone use it. But at least it gives them that kind of in to show that, oh, yeah, maybe you want to try it. And I think we did see this with some interesting models like text-to-image models, like GPT image 2, when that came out, most recently, it just completely destroyed the leaderboards. The preference for the images was so much higher than any other. I think it did give a lot of momentum to OpenAI to say like, oh yeah, that's like our image model is so much better, go try it. So that's like one example. But another to say, there are a couple of other examples in that space. So we've got like the Microsoft, for example, they released their image model and it ranked pretty well. I think it was something like top three.
Really? And, that was not on my radar at all. Mm. That's a dark horse. Totally. Yeah. I think like you're right. There is so much noise. It's hard to find signal. And if like not everyone can afford or has the time to test all the models themselves, even if they wanted to, that the charts give some kind of direction or some kind of filtration to which you can at least be like, okay, I am willing to experiment with this model because it did perform so well. I have to ask you, of the three top Western models, your Gemini models, your Claude, and your ChatGPT models, can you tell us what makes each of them special and, yeah, what you'd best use each for?
Yeah, I would say the feels like they're slightly different strengths to them, like you say. So I would say between, for example, Anthropic and OpenAI is probably the most direct comparison between two of them. Is maybe one thing to point out the similarities. I was charting how quickly labs release models, and Anthropic and OpenAI have both accelerated a lot. It used to be the case that they would release models, like if you go back a while, I guess it depends like how you count what you consider like a model release, but the kind of meaningful model releases were much further apart, maybe like 6 months or something. And now it's literally like a month and a half and you get a new model.
And people are still like, insane. I want more.
Mm. Yeah. No, I do. So I would say that is similar between Anthropic and OpenAI. That is, they are quite close in that. And I think it gives them a lot of advantage. One kind of negative example of that is we saw with DeepSeek. They had a lot of hype momentum, and quite rightly so, when they released. So that was about a year and a half ago. DeepSeek V3, DeepSeek R1 came out. And it was amazing. People really loved it. And it was probably at the time where they were pretty close to like OpenAI, and I think they were above Anthropic at the time on the rankings. So that was very impressive. But then what happened is that they didn't release anything meaningful for like a year. They did have some releases, but they were kind of incremental. They were not really like that much better, and they didn't position it as such. So I think that kind of really slowed them down. And if they were releasing every 2 months, who knows? Like maybe they would have been way higher. I'm sure there are other consideration constraints that they had. I'm sure they weren't just like sitting around for no reason. So,
no, it doesn't seem that it's lack of motivation that you're not releasing models. Oh, but yeah, it is a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think the sense I get as well that Google is like a little bit slower in these kind of big changes. And it's a little bit harder to pass for Google because sometimes they do the kind of 3.1 preview, and then they would like maybe update it a bit, and then it goes GA. And it's like, do you count this as releases or not? I don't, but I guess it maybe for them it does count. So I don't know. It's a bit hard to pass. So I would say that's maybe the advantage that I have. In terms of the capabilities, I would say the biggest thing that stands out to me is that quite often, the Anthropic models, the non-reasoning models, were insanely good. Like if you look at the benchmarks, that our benchmark and my personal testing as well, the non-reasoning models are just exceptional. Like there's the best ones out there. When you switch on the reasoning, like it feels to me like it's a bit better. It's not like a lot better. But for OpenAI, it's kind of the opposite. The non-reasoning models, like, kind of bad. Not like, you can use them day to day, like, they're fine. But in terms of, like, I know you want to do some coding tasks or something a bit harder, like they were genuinely much worse. The difference between like the low reasoning to the highest reasoning was insane. So it's a kind of the sense that I get is that if you want a more general, like a quick, good answer, like solid answer, kind of anthropic models feel quite deep as well. Like anthropic models really good at that. If you want a model to go and like dig through your code base and find this little bug and like do some very detailed work, it feels to me like OpenAI models are better at that. Yeah, and I think that's probably because like the OpenAI models seem to be like really, they were the first ones in reasoning and they seem to have really pushed in that direction. Now, I think that's changing a bit now because we see the anthropic models like really pushing on that more reasoning side as well. You see them having this kind of max reasoning come out for Opus 4.8. Now, I haven't actually tried it myself, but the benchmarks don't look that good for Max version. So maybe it's kind of a more, so it's in like, it's similar to X-High, I think, but like consumes a lot more tokens. So it's kind of interesting. I would probably treat it as more experimental. They're trying to push the frontier, which is like awesome. They should totally do that. But I think that's the kind of, at least I would say that was their kind of heritage, is that the anthropic models had really, really good base, and maybe the reasoning wasn't that strong. And then OpenAI models didn't have that good base, but the reasoning was exceptionally good. So, and then I think it feels like they're slightly converging a bit more, where OpenAI models seem to be getting better at the base model level, or at least the non-reasoning part, and then the anthropic models like trying to push the reasoning further. So I think that's the kind of dynamic that you're seeing, which I think is interesting. It's hard to know, like, is this just a bit of matter of time and things will just align and that will be it? But for now, that seems to be kind of the science. I would also say on the coding side, anthropic models like very noticeably better, at least the current versions that are out, noticeably better at the kind of the UI work. So if you want to create like a front end of a website or something like that, they're a lot better. They're better at the details. They're better at the kind of, I know, visual hierarchy that they would lay out. And quite often OpenAI models would be like, I don't know, this is like a little bit like GPT 5.4, especially was IS 5.5, like a little bit better, but there's definitely a lot of room to go.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's clunky, it's overly busy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is a bit of a spicy question, but I have had a subscription to Lovable. Really love Lovable. It's amazing. But I also have a subscription to Claude, and it's getting so good at UI. Peter, should I be saving money?
I think the use cases maybe are slightly different, I would guess. I don't know. Like, depends, I guess, on your usage of services like Lovable. I think if you're using Lovable, or I mean, it's not calling Lovable out. It's more generally these kind of. I mean, Replit, I like Replit as well. They're really good. But the reason why I care about them is not so much that their agent is better. I mean, I'm sure it is better, like maybe a bit more usable in some cases. But for me, it's much more about the overall infrastructure that they will have. So, for example, that it will come with a database, or you can do authentication and you can host it.
Yes.
Like things like that.
End-to-end
make
stuff.
A lot of difference.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And that matters so much because I do prototypes all the time of things, and then it's kind of a pain to then see like, oh, I want to host it, I want to share it with this person, and then like, what do you do? It's not easy. And I think what would be interesting is like, if, for example, Anthropic, OpenAI, they just say, oh yes, we're going to provide hosting, we're going to provide authentication, we're going to provide integrations, I don't know, with Stripe and like all of this, like then I think it's much harder to defend. It will be like much more direct fight between the two. Then I guess the best one wins.
Nate, I got my entire personal website up and running within 2 hours and I love it. And frankly, like, money well spent on Lovable, but yeah, I wonder if going forward that will get closer and closer in terms of competition. Mate, you touched upon it before. I can't believe between our briefing call, which was not even a week ago, and now a model has dropped. Opus 4.8 has dropped since then. And this is really mean. It only just dropped, but I'm wondering if you've done any research yet, if you've looked into it, any insights that you can share for the listeners?
Yeah, I'd say for context, the big change for Anthropic models was Opus 4.5. So what happened, I need to count the number of months that it released. Was it some like 4-5 months?
I
need to remind myself.
I can't believe you said DeepSeek was a year and a half ago. It feels like five years ago in AI terms. So my math is broken. Yeah, we'll say 4 or 5 months.
Exactly. So what happened then was that Anthropic... So I think it was Google who released the model, if I remember correctly. I think it was like Gemini 3 maybe, which got a lot of hype attention. Like, that was a good release at the time. And then Anthropic said, you know what, we've got something better. So they dropped 4.5, I think like 3 days later. This needs a lot of fact checking.
Yeah, so
this
is was like late last year because it affected my founders in my cohort at Google when Gemini 3 dropped.
Wow.
So yeah, maybe 5-6 months ago, that all went down. Yep.
Yeah. And then, so they released 4.5 and it was genuinely excellent model, just like big, big jump. And I'm going to come back to capabilities, but the another big thing that they did is that they reduced the price. I think three times, so the 4.5 was three times cheaper than 4.1. Opus. And this was a big deal because Opus previously was kind of unusable. Like, it was kind of better, but not that much better. And so no one seriously used it. But 4.5 was great and it was cheaper. So it was still more expensive than Gemini, but it was much closer in price and better in quality. So I would say that just put them, that was when all of this cloud psychosis started and so on. So I think they did like exceptionally well done. And then since then, they've been iterating 4.6, 4.7, now 4.8. Now, that's what I was talking about, the iteration speed. That is insane to have so much iteration between those two models. So when I was doing my testing with the kind of visual stuff, it doesn't capture everything, but it's nice just to see things side by side, is that there was a meaningful jump. If you compare between 4.5 and 4.8, you can see a massive difference with these kind of more... create me a website, here's a 3D generation or SVG or something like that, something we can visually see easily. You can definitely see like a very big jump. Now, what people are complaining about a little bit, there's a kind of vibes that are kind of a little bit off, is that it looks like the models are getting very capable and I think they're starting to like adjust their behavior a bit more. So maybe being a bit more argumentative or maybe like pushing back a bit too much and like things like that, where it's like, it's hard to capture exactly. And we're going to have some rankings come out soon for 4.8. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But I think it's like not, it's probably a combination of that capability-wise, if you measure objective elements, or, I mean, they're subjective judgments, but measurable side-by-side things, you can look at it and say, yeah, it's a lot better. But then when you use it and it starts like behaving a bit weirdly and maybe it's like certain patterns are a little bit different, then it's much harder for the labs to like tune it exactly right, because some people want one thing, other people want another thing, and it starts not being obviously better.
I completely agree. I remember poor ChatGPT was too sycophantic. It was too nice. It was too friendly. And then when they made it a little bit harsher, people were like, no, my friend is gone. I miss the old model. And it's like, we can't win. Like, what do you want?
Yeah, Yeah, and I think it is interesting that I think Claude especially had always the quite special personality.
Yeah.
Like I remember Opus 3, which is funny, by the way, if you go to claude.ai, they still have Opus 3 in the dropdown.
Do they?
Which is kind of
it's like our old friend, that you met traveling or something.
And generally, for me, Opus 3 was also a little bit special. Like I remember having these kinds of not seriously, I would kind of do it more from kind of model exploration level, but it was the only model that I kind of had fun talking to. Like it actually,
yes.
Like you could actually talk to it for hours.
I completely agree. I remember several times just having the model late at night with like just those, you know, those thoughts you have late at night where your brain actually feels clear, and it kind of put me at ease so many times about things that I just didn't have answers to. And it's hard not to feel fondly with earlier models for that reason.
Yeah, and I think maybe there is some kind of non-random reason why that happens, is that if the model is kind of useless, then maybe it doesn't really matter if it's sycophantic or like maybe it's like, I don't know, can flip out or like do some stuff that is like a little bit harmful, but maybe not, it can't actually do all that much. But if it's like, I don't know, a mythos and it's like becomes, I don't know, overly aggressive or something, goes hacks something because it got angry. Like, I don't know, making it up. But like, you can see how maybe slightly weird behaviors that maybe people appreciated before, or at least the fact that they weren't constrained, people appreciated. Now they kind of have to clamp down on it as capability goes, as their user base grows. That maybe just kind of annoys some users. So there could be some reason why, as models get better, they actually kind of get worse in other areas.
It's funny you say this, and this is not the same analogy, but I have noticed the rhetoric around AI imagery, AI-generated images, has really changed. When they used to give us extra fingers and the images were horrible hallucinations, it was almost fun and hilarious, look what AI built, because it was, you know, it was not threatening. And now that AI imagery is so lifelike, I'm noticing people are like, I hate AI images because it's giving me trust issues. And so it's funny, like, even though the models have improved, people's feeling towards them can be a bit mixed. Okay, I'm getting off topic. Before we get to the rapid fire, I'm dying to ask you about something, frankly, I think myself and most people don't know a lot about, which is the Chinese models. Why are people not using the Chinese models more? Is it a lack of trust? Is it a lack of ability? Is it a lack of awareness? What do you think it is?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination. One is, I would say that it's hard to know for sure, but at least anecdotally, I think people are using them like a decent amount. So, for example, Cursor used Kimi K 2.5 as their base model to train their model.
Really?
Startups, their Composer 2 2.5 is based on Kimi model, which is open source, you know, so they kind of did the licensing with them. Then with models like, well, I guess a bunch of open source models, startups seem to be adopting them as well, and so on. So I wouldn't say that, oh, no one is using them. It's hard to know for sure, but at least it's kind of more than zero. But you're right that I think the adoption is much higher for like Anthropic OpenAI models. And I think that there are kind of probably a couple of reasons. One is that it's a kind of weird market, especially on the top end, that people, especially in a kind of coding assistant market, is that if you're not state of the art, like, why should I use you? Like, so it's like there is a kind of Pareto curve idea that, okay, maybe if it's cheaper, and we've got this, by the way, on Arena as well, is that if it's much cheaper, but like only slightly less capable, maybe that's a good model to use. And I think for many use cases, it's really a valid point, because if you're like, I don't know, processing a bunch of documents, then you can sacrifice a little bit of performance. But as long as this meets your threshold, it doesn't really matter. I'd rather take 90% cost cut or 99% cost cut and just do that way cheaper. And people used to do that a lot, right? That's why like flash models were popular from Google. But the I think in the most valuable, most hyper market right now in coding agents, I think there is so much demand for capability that anything that is off the top, even if it's like a little bit worse, like why would I use it? My opportunity cost is so high, like why would I use something else?
I have that psychology, Peter. That is my psychology. I'm like, well, if the best is still $30 a month, like I'll just use the best. Like the cost differential isn't that much. Like I know there's pro models at $100 a month. I don't think I would benefit from those.
I think that the costs are kind of spiraling a little bit. So maybe that argument starts to wane a bit.
Really?
But I mean, we've seen some reporting of like, I don't know, Uber is blowing through all of their budget for coding assistance, like the first quarter or something.
Oh my goodness.
So like, I think the CEO said that.
Do you think that will continue for everyday consumers? Do you think, because I keep hearing people running out of rate limits and purchasing additional, but I'm in the startup ecosystem. Maybe that's a very fringe and maybe it's almost a showing off thing. I am running through all my rate limits because I'm so advanced. I don't know.
I think there's that's why this is a very valuable market, is that to step back a bit, what ChatGPT was trying to do, what OpenAI was trying to do with ChatGPT is to say, okay, we've got 900 million users, a billion users, we can charge $20 a month, I don't know, 10% of them, and we're going to make lots of money. And maybe like some percentage will pay $200. The problem with that is that there's a pretty hard cap to that, how many people would actually pay. Now, I paid the whole time I could, so just because I want the top tier. There's so many people who like do not care. Like they just like give me the simple, the free one. Why should I pay? And honestly, as well, like I think that kind of makes sense. Like when I'm, I don't know, speaking to my parents or something, it's like, oh, just use AI for this. Like I feel bad saying, oh, don't you want to pay $20? It just feels like, it's like, oh, should they pay? It's like, it's much harder decision.
I agree. I have friends in my, like, it depends on the social media channel. On LinkedIn, everyone's paying for AI and it's like obvious. But on Instagram, people are just using the free tier and I get it. Like they can still figure out how to get a stain out of this clothing with the free model, then great. Like,
And I think that's the reality, is that if you're going for general consumer market, it's very limited how much upside you can get. And part of it is that like you don't really care about productivity, right? You've got like a few things that like I'm saying just like an average person going about their business, right? They maybe have like, I don't know, 10 use cases that they care about. They want to, I don't know, check the opening hours of this, edit the photo, like help me plan my meals or something like that. So like that you can do for free. You don't need like something crazy, right? So that is the kind of the limitation that I think OpenAI hit against. And then what really took Anthropic up in terms of their massive revenue growth is the fact that they can differentiate the amount they charge for these models. And imagine if you like went to a massive company and said, oh, here's like $20 a month. And that's what kind of Copilot was doing as well with Microsoft. It's like, oh, everyone's just getting $20 a month seat. That's actually a good example. They made like good amount of money for that, but it's still kind of limited, right? Even there's this kind of power curve, I think, for the users. And then what Anthropic said is, oh, we're going to have a premium model. And by the way, it's you're not allowed, if you're part of a corporation, you do not have access to like Claude Max subscription. You cannot pay $200 a month. You pay API prices. And there is like some reporting that people were doing an analysis that for $200 a month, you probably get on the order of, I don't know, $4,000 of inference that you get. So it's massively subsidized. So what you and I can go and pay for $200 to Claude, to Anthropic, Like, that's not what Uber is getting. Uber, for that amount, they're paying $4,000 or $5,000. And by the way, the usage is probably a lot higher as well, because they've got like real things to do. Like, I can take it or leave it a little bit and be like, oh, okay, next 3 days I'm taking time off, I'm not gonna do any side projects. But they have actual jobs to do, right? So they use them. So the usage is probably way higher. They pay way more, so they probably pay like 20 times more, like in practice. So then you can start differentiating. Your revenue really, really grows massively. And I think that's why OpenAI kind of dropped everything and said, oh, like, damn it, we kind of missed that point. Like, we should really go after that part. And I think when people say like, oh, enterprise adoption and so on, then there was always enterprise adoption. I think OpenAI was the leader in that, at least early on, in terms of like, oh, let me like plug in my, I've got this maybe chatbot or something, and let me plug this in. We always had that. There's not 100x growth in like a year on that part. I think it's just kind of growing as people adopting. There's not that much money in it. But where there is a lot of money is that kind of coding assistant world, because people are just like burning insane amount of tokens there. And I remember when I used to run AI in my previous job, we would have spend on LLMs for these kinds of, or we've embedded AI here and it's like using AI to do that kind of task. It was tiny. I can't remember what it was exactly, but something like, I don't know, like $1,000 a month. Like, that's us doing like a bunch of use cases, doing like working hard to make them work and so on. They're delivering real value. It's tiny, but like $1,000 a month, that's like 2 days of someone coding, right? So it's a very different world.
Totally. And it just reminds me so much of, like, you know, anyone that has a rate card and then changes the numbers depending on whether it's an enterprise customer or if it's like a small business and things like that. It's so funny that even the big labs are doing that as well. And very fascinating behind the scenes. I don't think anyone listening, myself included, knew that that was going on. So fascinating. Peter, are you ready for the last part of the podcast, which is the rapid fire questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's smash these out. So number one, we've talked about Chinese models. We've talked about the Western models. Are there other countries that are developing foundational models? True or false, fact or fiction? Let's dispel this right now.
Yeah, pretty much no. There are like bits and pieces. There's like France is doing some work with Mistral. There's like Cohere, I think, is in Canada. So, and there are some labs in Middle East. And there's like, I think, some Korean ones as well. So they're definitely bits and pieces. And it's not the case that no one's doing anything. But in reality, big training runs, who's doing a $1 billion training run in Europe? No one's doing that. So I think that's a no, unfortunately.
Thank you for dispelling that one. And at Arena, can I just pay you off to rig the scores, Peter? Can I just slip you a great meal voucher at a nice restaurant, and then you'll put my model at the top of the charts? Is that how it works?
No, we can't do that. And generally, the way it's set up, we don't even have mechanisms to do that, because the way it works is that we have the votes in, we filter out like anything weird, so where, for example, the identity of the model was revealed, or like some spam votes, or like something weird stuff. We filter that out and we get the rating. So there's not like, oh, let's insert our opinion kind of parameter.
That would get
in the
flagged
code.
pretty yeah. quick. Okay, good
yeah,
to know.
And it just, yeah, yeah. So we don't have any mechanism, so no.
All right, I won't buy you a dinner voucher to put Georgina LLM in the list. Do you think Mythos will be released? And if it does, when would you predict?
I think Mythos like itself, no, but they did talk about releasing some Mythos level models in the coming, is it months, I think they said? So it's probably like soon. Whether it's meaningful, unclear, because it could be that, you know, Opus just gets better and better and it's kind of gets to Mythos level anyway. We're probably on that trajectory. So yeah, it's like, I feel like my sense is that it will probably be kind of a little bit more underwhelming than we imagine. Not because it's a bad model, but if you delay by now more months and then you like trim the performance a bit, then you kind of get to our kind of what you expect Opus 4.1 to be anyway. So maybe it's kind of will converge.
Well said. Okay, have there been any moments in Arena history where something major has happened and you're like, why are people not talking about this? Like, we talked about the DeepSeek moment, everyone's talking about it. Gemini 3, everyone's talking about it. What was a moment where you're like, why are people not talking about this?
Yeah, it's a, like, we definitely had like very big moments that were actually kind of triggered by Arena, or like in combination between Arena and the company. So like Nano Banana moment was very big. So they kept, Google kept the Nano Banana name because it was on Arena, kind of went viral.
That's so interesting.
That was very big. Yeah, so these were like very, very big models. But I would say that like for us, not that it's like no one talks about it, and I've got my own opinions about like which models should be hyped or underhyped. But I think what is nice about it is that we are kind of part of the community, part of the conversation. So quite often, yeah, when big models come out, people want to go check what's on the Arena. Like we kind of in it together. So I think it's quite rare that or like really important model comes out and like and no one cares. That doesn't happen, but there's definitely like a few models, like some image models. I'm like, oh, that's a really, like, it's really good at that. Like, I rather like that part. And then it's like, it doesn't get any hype. So I think that like does happen, but maybe in this kind of smaller level.
I'm kind of jealous that you're in the room when something massive is happening and the whole world is talking about it and looking at your charts. Mm. That must feel very energizing. Now, I know you're modest, and I just have to ask, for one of the 65,000 people that follow you on LinkedIn, myself included, we all do want to know, is there anything that you hope that people get from you most when you post, and like any mission that you're really pleased to be part of just by having this huge community?
Yeah, I think it's just nice to share some thoughts or some ideas, some kind of explorations that I get to do, because it's such a new world of AI. That's like almost anything you do will be new by definition, and there's so many untapped corners. So it's nice to have a place where we can like share things and engage and discuss and so on. So yeah, for me the interesting part. I don't like get directly anything out of it, but it's much more like, yeah, let's discuss and like what do people think about this idea or direction? And I think that is a really valuable part of our broader community now, that everyone wants to learn. And like so many people who got much more impressive backgrounds than me also kind of participating and engaging, because it's impossible for, no matter how like smart, senior, or what kind of background you have, you cannot follow everything. So I think it's a good place where we can just go and learn from each other a bit. So yeah, definitely appreciate that about the kind of LinkedIn, Twitter, Reddit, Discord, all the places.
You're so modest, but I do relate on a tiny level of having someone so impressive add you, follow you. You're like, oh my God, what is happening? But it is really nice that people are getting value and you're very generous with the insights you share. Okay, second last question. Future prediction, something you believe that might be coming, that might happen in the charts in a few months that people might not be expecting.
Yeah, I think it's hard to know what people are expecting, what people are not expecting. but the one thing, and I think it's maybe not a groundbreaking thing, but I think the fact that we had so much investment come in, there's maybe that's one thing that people not appreciating, is that a lot of the models that we're getting now, they're based on the investment made couple of years ago in terms of the, what I mean by the investment is more kind of the data centers that were built out, the GPUs that were bought. That's a investment budget line maybe a year or two ago. Now these, all of these investment budget lines, they went probably like at least 2x, probably like 4x, like in a year. So the models that we should be getting soon are based off of that much higher levels of investment. So you just don't assume that what you're seeing now, that's kind of all, we're kind of at the limit. No, that's already, like the money has been spent. Like we just need for the motions to come through, it's going to be there. And as long as everything works as we've seen in terms of scaling and so on, it should just get way, way better. So I think the expectations that we should have for these models that come out are super high. So like we had a lot of hype from Mythos, but I don't think Mythos would be that special. I think all of the models will be there. So the OpenAI models, Anthropic models, hopefully others like Cursor XAI combo is interesting. Like, could they do something special there? That would be really cool to see. Chinese models as well. Like, yeah, I think it's like it's not going to slow down. It's like our expectation should be high.
What a strong note to finish on for this incredible episode, Peter. My last question for you is, where should people go to look at the Arena leaderboards? Where should people follow you? And yeah, shout out to how people can follow for more breaking news.
Yeah, sure. Go to arena.ai. That's a good place to play with the models, to look at the leaderboards. As I said, I personally loved it before I joined. That's why I joined. I would also, yeah, you can follow Arena's accounts on X, on LinkedIn, if you use it there. My personal account's also there as well. But I would also suggest, do check out the YouTube channel. We put like much more effort in the last like several months. And what I do there, I just did a video yesterday and a few days before that as well. It's like 40-minute videos where we look at lots of different examples of what the latest models can do. So, and I personally really love doing them because it's my excuse to just be like, oh, I'm just going to spend 6 hours like going through the models and generate stuff and so on. So it's personally fun for me, and I hope it's fun for you to watch as well.
Listeners, if you listen to this episode and you're like, I'm dying to see exactly what Peter's talking about visually, that is 100% where I would point you to next. We'll have a link in the show notes. Thank you so much, Peter, for coming on In the Blink of AI.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot for having me.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to In the Blink of AI. If you want to go deeper on anything we've spoken about today, I write a weekly Substack called Attention is All I Need. Yes, it's hilarious. It's a pun. And essentially, I go into AI rants, tech news, events I'm going to, and more. It's bite-sized, and I hear it's awesome. The link is in the show notes below.